Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight on Movie Geeks United, writer-director Charles Oliver tells us all about his new film, Take, starring Minnie Driver. Coming up next. Film Take, Minnie Driver stars as a grieving mother obsessed with a man who forever altered the course of her life. This raw, honest, and emotionally wrenching film features tour de force performances from Driver and co-star Jeremy Renner and marks the debut effort from writer-director Charles Oliver. The film has garnered countless awards at some of the most prestigious film festivals across the globe and opens in limited release on Friday, July 18th. It is a great pleasure to welcome writer-director Charles Oliver on the show to discuss this terrific film. Mr. Oliver, hello.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us very much. I'm interested, this is usually the first question I ask directors. This fascinates me. What movies first inspired you to become a filmmaker?
I hate that question.
You hate that question.
There's too many. I've been turned on to film ever since I was a young kid, but I think the ones that sort of really spoke to me the most were back in my college, you know, overly academic days where I thought I was much more intelligent than I was. But I really like the Truffaut films, but I'm also a huge Hitchcock fan. And I think I like both of those directors because they're both so involved in every element of filmmaking and seem to, what intrigues me most about filmmaking and those directors, I guess if I had to think of a modern day one that sort of fell into the same category, would be Baz Luhrmann, but where they use every single element of filmmaking to communicate a single message and usually without the audience being aware of how they're doing it. And so those are the ones that I get excited about, got excited about initially and sort of created my initial excitement about filmmaking in general.
Sure. And tell me, I know that you had done some producing work before embarking on this project, Take. How did you get, where did the initial idea for Take come about, and how did you get it off the ground?
You know, the initial idea really came from a couple things I wanted to explore in narrative form, and one of them was this idea of revenge and resentment and what it does to somebody over a long period of time, and the vehicle with which to do that seemed like it would be best suited for this idea of the time between a crime and when someone is executed, because I saw so many of these interviews over the years or quick snippets of people on the news right after a sentence was delivered, but 10 years between then and when the execution, or 20 years, whatever it may be, between then and when the execution occurred, and you could sort of see what this person was in for, as they were so filled with hatred and resentment and anger. You knew that they were going to have to wait for so long to get their moment of so-called peace. And so I was really interested in exploring what happened to a person between, what happened to a victim of or a family member of a victim between the time where they learned that their criminal was going to be executed and when the execution actually occurred. So that was sort of one of the initial impetuses. The other one, I think, would be this idea of strangers, how we sort of assemble each other's lives with brief glimpses at somebody and sort of figure out who they are and make judgments accordingly. And I wanted to sort of explore both of those together, and Take became the way in which to do that.
I'm going to need another week, okay?
You have until tonight's game to pay up. Then it's over.
What's that supposed to mean?
Use your imagination. Over.
I need $2,000. I need $2,000 now.
these are two very strong themes for me, because I'm always taken by stories about how the stranger next to you can wind up being such an important part of your life, and
yeah,
you don't realize
that. These
time.
Two characters, it defines them, so yeah.
Absolutely, and plus the need to forgive, I think, is a powerful theme. But when you're crafting, as a writer, when you're crafting this journey, did it simply involve your imagination, or was it informed by any research you did or conversations with people that had gone through this?
Well, it first started just sort of out of my head and out of my heart, I think. And I wrote the rough draft with that in mind, so without really any research at all into, you know, the prison systems, into the death penalty, into restorative justice, for instance. None of that really informed my first initial draft, which is, you know, possibly such a bad draft. But nonetheless, I did that in about a month, and right after I finished writing it, I came across an article in Reader's Digest about restorative justice, about these meetings between, you know, perpetrators and family members of their victims and what they sort of did for both parties. And it was just fascinating because some of the dialogue in those meetings was right out of my script. And then, you know, the next week I actually got a videotape of a friend of mine who TiVo'd an Oprah show on restorative justice as well and watched that. And again, it was, you know, right out of the film. And so after that, I spent about 7 or 8 months refining and editing the film, or the script rather, to really address those issues that are addressed with restorative justice and sort of put them at the crux of the film and work from the inside out, if you will.
Right. And this is what fascinates me, because, and maybe this is an unanswerable question, but I find your film very, very truthful. And I always admire that in writing. And
from your experience on death row?
No. Well, that's something, because I have no experience, personal experience with that, but I so empathize with these characters. And I can identify, and that's the strength of you as a writer. How do you craft these characters so that they're not the stereotypical grieving mother and murderous criminal?
I don't know. There's a trick. I don't know that I figured it out. But, I mean, sort of back to your earlier question to answer this, I mean, after that first draft, I then went and did quite a bit of research on all those topics, which really informed it. I don't know that that necessarily helped me make sure that they didn't turn into caricatures of people, the grieving mother and the horrible criminal. I think what does that, you know, I only know the experience of being a writer and director simultaneously. I don't know the experience of being isolated as one or the other. But for me, I guess the trick of it for me is to really feel for them the way I want to feel for them in the writing process, and then trying to see how that carries through once the actor comes on board and really collaborates with you in almost redefining that character. Because the truth of the matter is, you know, you write something, but when you get actors involved, it becomes something very different, which is tremendous, because now you have sort of the gestalt of three people's input and intelligence and creative sentiment instead of just one. In the case of Minnie and Jimmy, I got quite a bit of value in sort of collaborating on those characters, you know, above and beyond just the actual performances, just really what they brought to the table and who they were. So that has a lot to do with it. But the truth of the matter is, Jamie, that I think the line between brilliance and cheese factor 5,000 is paper thin. So it's always something that you are, you're sort of always riding that balance between something that falls into saccharine or you know, overly didactic or whatever it is. You know, you're always very close to that line, I think, to get what you want. It's not a big gaping chasm between something that's saccharine and something that's really well done. I think it's very tricky.
Yeah, I agree. And you spoke of your cast. When you're seeking out a cast for this, and you have Minnie Driver and Jeremy Renner, what kind of qualities did they embody that made them perfect for these roles in your eyes?
What got me excited about her as an actress in general for this part is she embodies, I think, in just her personality, in addition, in just sort of her presence. Whether it be in any role that I've seen her in, and certainly in person, she has a great sense of strength and vulnerability at the same time. And any actor that has those qualities simultaneous and sort of in conflict / in harmony with each other interests me from the beginning. But she especially has that sense of like I say, strength and vulnerability at the same time. So that made her perfect for the role in my mind. And in terms of Jeremy, I mean, the goal with this is a very difficult character to cast because the goal there was to make you sort of sympathize with him or like him, even sort of against your better judgment. I wanted the audience to get to know this character and to sympathize a bit with him, even though they didn't want to. And so I wanted there to be sort of an inherent struggle in the viewer of how they felt towards this character. And so I had to find sort of someone that could play, a bad guy, a not-so-great guy. But more importantly, I was not interested in seeing, you know, the proverbial man of the black hat near as much as I was in seeing someone that just really had a series of bad things happen to them and made a series of really bad choices and might not quite have had the moral underpinnings to give him better judgment skills, and just sort of see how things can devolve or dissolve into some pretty horrible choices and some pretty horrible events. So I really wanted the audience to sort of feel like, you know, I'm not that far away from this guy. I could see this sort of thing happening to me or to someone I know a little easier than I might have imagined. Because that's what's interesting, going back to your comment on strangers, is when you meet someone, you so quickly sort of say, oh, they're this way. I can't even slightly relate to that person because they're so different from me. But the truth of the matter is the more you get to know them, the more you realize that there's a lot of similarities, maybe more so than differences. There's not so much that separates us.
Yeah, and you know, we spoke with Jeremy on the show a couple of months ago, and I told him what strikes me about him is he seems to be a fearless actor. He seems to really be attracted to those high wire performances.
Yeah, they both are actually. I mean, it's one of the things I really respected in Minnie as well is that she was willing to take on such a difficult role. I mean, she almost seemed to get charged by the challenge. But you're absolutely right about Jeremy. I mean, he is. He's in it 100%. He puts himself in 100%, like no one I've ever worked with, actually. And I think one of the reasons it works for him is because he's a tremendously humble person. He's not at all like your typical actor. and that's really interesting to watch because he'll do a take. I mean, the thing about Jeremy is every take he does is brilliant, but it's extremely different. So he gives you four takes, and they're so divergently unique from each other that you have four ways you can now play the scene. And it's not like you're throwing out three takes and choosing one. It's like you play with all four takes of the edit bay and see which way you want to pull the scene, which is really tremendous to have. And it's because he is so humble about the process and so open, he's extremely self-aware. So he'll come away from a take and say, you know, that felt a little this way. I want to try it this way. And I might feel like, you know, gosh, take three was great for me. We can move on. But he'll say, no, just give me one more, and we'll do another one. And it's a totally different approach, just as brilliant, but something that is, you know, I hadn't even thought of. And so oftentimes what we end up with is, you know, he'll do a take the way I want, and then he'll do a take the way he wants, and then we'll sort of discover together the way it really should be. And so it becomes really exciting. And I think it's because he's so self-aware and humble about it that, that's what makes him fearless, as you say, and what gets you some pretty great performances.
Oh, yeah. And also something, another dynamic aspect of your film is the visual style of it. And you have said in previous interviews that one of the challenges in making it was crafting a particular look for what are essentially four separate places in time, the past and present of the two leads. And tell me why that was important and what those looks express.
That was very important to me, and sort of visuals is just one side of it. I mean, the truth of the matter is we had sort of a Bible for each of those worlds, and it included things like composition, color, which is the most obvious, I think, camera movement, sound design, editing approach, everything, all the elements of filmmaking, as I alluded to before. This is what makes filmmaking exciting to me, is how you can manipulate all those elements to make an emotional response in your viewer. But all of those had their own set of rules for each of those four narratives. And the reason it was important for me to answer your question, twofold. One, I needed the viewer to know immediately in the first three frames of each scene where they were. Otherwise, you know, it happens subconsciously where they were, because I don't want to pull them out of the moment. The challenge, I think, in crafting a film in the editor room especially is that the viewer is never pulled out of the film, never thinks about their popcorn, about their days or whatever, that they are so honed in that they're emotionally yours for that 99 minutes in the case of this film. So I needed to be able to quickly orient the viewer. This is exactly where you are. No questions. You don't have to stop and think outside the context of the film. You know where you are. And that's especially important in a nonlinear narrative like this film, where you're bouncing around so quickly that it's easy to get lost. And I don't want to always have to start with a close-up of my actor's face to tell them where they are. I might want to start with a street corner or a desert, whatever. And I need to be able to orient them with certain things subconsciously. So that's part of it, just sort of a logistic reason. But the more important part of it, frankly, is that I wanted to use all those tools, whether they're the camera movement or the composition or the sound design, to sort of manipulate a different emotion out of the viewer in each case. I really wanted the viewer to feel differently when we're in the scenes with Saul in the prison than when we're in the scenes with him in the past, making through his day and sort of making some of those choices that he did. And I wanted that to feel very different from the warmth and love that's in Minnie's scenes in the past when she's with her husband and her son. And I wanted that to feel yet equally unique from the scenes where Minnie's driving through the desert filled with rage and looking forward to watching the execution of this prisoner. So, for instance, in that world, I wanted the color to be sucked out. I wanted the camera to be relatively static. I wanted there to be a lot of sort of, I don't want to get too technical here, but a lot of sort of horizontal compression to give you the feeling of entrapment from the compression you see in Saul's past that gives him the entrapment. But there's certain things you do to sort of make it feel like, in those desert scenes, like I want the viewer to feel almost thirsty, like the love and life has been sort of sucked right out of her. And so all those things were done to sort of achieve a different emotional response in the viewer that they felt when they watched it, but hopefully weren't aware of how we were achieving it, right? I mean, that's the key, to manipulate your audience to feel a certain way without knowing how, without having to do, chimes in the music score to say, now you're supposed to cry, right?
Exactly.
You want to do all this without telling them why you're doing it or how you're doing it. Because it is. It's a big manipulation. That's what filmmaking is. And the difference between a good and a bad film is when your audience is aware of how they're being manipulated and when they're not.
No, but the film is very truthful, as I said, and I admire the ambition of the visual structures as well. But obviously you're working, this is an independent film. You're working on a modest budget. And I can imagine how that could hinder you as a filmmaker, but is there any way that it benefits you?
I've heard so many answers to this question over the years as I've heard it posed to other people. And part of me feels like there's no benefit because money can solve anything. You can throw money at any problem and you can solve it. But I've never had the luxury of a $25 or $50 million budget, so I don't. I think there is a tremendous advantage, though, and I hope this doesn't sound too repetitive for maybe when you've asked it to other people, but I think the advantage, at least from my perspective, is it forces you to think on your feet, and so it forces you to be much more intellectually engaged every moment of the day. You cannot afford to hang out at the craft service table and spend an hour just chatting with your art director about, the baseball game last night while you're waiting for a lighting setup, because you are demanded to be intellectually or physically and emotionally and mentally engaged every minute, because the only way to solve problems is with your head, not with money. And I think the other advantage, frankly, is that you find, you sort of exploit your weakness, and I get a charge out of that. So, your weakness is you don't have the money, or you don't have the location you want, or you might not have the actor you're supposed to have that day. You can find a way to exploit that. In other words, you can find a way to make the film or the moment of the day or the scene better because of that versus worse. And that gets sort of exciting. But of course, you have to couch all this in the fact that I've never had $50 million to make a movie, so I might say something very different next time I make a movie if it has, five times the budget or something.
Well, I think you're well on your way to getting that kind of budget, my friend. I want to explore kind of the reaction this movie has received. You've played festivals across the globe, and it's gotten raves. It's done very well. What personal interaction have you had with the audience that has meant the most to you?
Yeah, that is where the real charge comes from. We've had some really, audiences of, 1,200 people in some of these festivals. And then I had audience, just last week I showed it to a class at Pepperdine who was studying restorative justice. And there was probably 15 kids in there, but man, were these kids engaged. And I was so impressed with their intellect and understanding of everything I was trying to communicate, which you often think as a filmmaker that maybe, half your audience is going to get some of these things because you may have erred on the side of too subtle in being afraid of being over the top. But that was really engaging as well. So I've had both scenarios, small audiences, big audiences, and some of the things I've I've been really happy with most of the things I've heard. And you know, the thing that's the biggest compliment to me that really gets me excited that I hear on a pretty regular basis is sort of a repeating theme is that it's not so much the interchange I have with the audience right after, as thrilling as that is, and the questions and the discussion and the debate that ensues, by the way, because there's a lot to debate in this film, which makes me happy that people want to talk about it. But the thing that's even more exciting is the emails or the phone calls I'll get from a person who knows a person, or an email that I'll get 3 days after the fact where people are saying how much they're thinking about the film for 2 or 3 days afterwards. And that's what really gets me excited. And that seems to be the common thread, is it lingers with people longer than they're used to for a movie, and which is, like I say, the greatest compliment I could have. Because that's my goal as a filmmaker, is I'm not interested in making films that just pure entertain. I'm interested in making films that entertain, but that make you think. That's what really gets me excited personally, and so that's great news for me.
And absolutely, and it does stay with you, and a lot of people have taken this to their hearts who have suffered similar experiences, and as you've said, proponents of restorative justice, as you've spoken about, and I know you didn't set out to make an issue film necessarily, but are you glad with that kind of direction it's taken, where proponents of that restorative justice have taken it under their wing?
I really am, actually, because I've met some pretty tremendous people. I've met quite a few victims of violent crimes and talked about their experience going through the restorative justice program, having prepared for and going ahead with a meeting with their perpetrator, so to speak. Either they're a victim or more likely a family member of a victim. I've had a lot of conversations with and done joint Q&As with for instance, a woman, Sue Solis, whose husband hired a hitman to shoot her and try to kill her, and she was shot through the stomach, and 2 weeks after being in the ER, she came out of it. But talked to her about her process and what she went through and coming to terms with what happened and coming to terms with her ex-husband, and had a chance to meet others as well, and just have tremendously compelling stories and have gone to tremendously impressive places emotionally. And I'm glad to have met and to have sort of peeked into their world for a bit. As well as some of the, we had a great opportunity to meet a guy named Donald Schmid, who's a professor at Notre Dame who handles the restorative justice program there, and working with a group called Prison Fellowship, a man by the name of Dan Van Es, who just an amazing individual who runs that whole program, and that has, volunteers across the globe, and who's really behind the film and the message that we are trying to get to address in the film as it relates to restorative justice. And just tremendous people doing tremendous things. So absolutely, I'm glad that it's sort of become an issue-based film. You're right, I didn't set out to do it. I didn't even know about restorative justice until the first draft was done, as I've said. But once I found out about it, it really sort of went in that direction. And even more so ever since we started really marketing the film, getting to know these people who are excited about its release as doing things for their own organizations.
Yeah, I let me tell you, I just found your movie to be so enlightening and a visceral experience, and I know you're opening up in New York on the 18th. Is this a platform release? Is that what's being planned?
Yeah, it is. We start in New York on the 18th, and we go to throughout L.A. on the 25th, and then we go to about 4 or 5 other cities over the next few weeks, and then a month after that, about 5 or 6 more cities, and then we go out from there. So,
fantastic. And our audience can learn more about it by visiting takethemovie.com, correct? That's the film website.
Yeah, the film site is takethemovie.com, and the restorative justice site that we've sort of created as a coalition around the film and the movement of restorative justice in terms of reforming our prison systems is takejustice.org or giveforgiveness.org. They're both sort of address different sides of the issues.
Fantastic. Now, is there anything coming up in your future, or are you too immersed in this process right now to think about that?
I am awfully immersed, but there are some things I'm working on, and I will tell you that they're not quite as heavy, which is good. This is a very heavy, intense film, and it's going to be nice to try something a little different. But they're equally thought-provoking, I think, so I'm pretty excited about them. So,
When those come to fruition, please, my friend, please come back and visit us. We'd love to have you back on.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the time today. Thank you very much.
You bet. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
I pray every night that he suffers the same pain I endure. Every morning when I...
Are you a filmmaker looking for a great score? Are you a filmmaker looking for a great score for your next movie? Well, look no further than Michael McCormack, the composer whose works you hear at the opening and the closing of every episode of Movie Geeks United. This is a phenomenal talent, and you can hear more samples of his work at michaelmccormackmusic.com or on his MySpace page, which you can access through the Movie Geeks United Top Friends.